We are back with another episode of the Tan and J-Man Show. As you can see, Tanner is not here as he is on vacation out in a very warm Phoenix, Arizona. I was checking the weather, and it's supposed to be, I think the high today was 102. It's a dry heat, low humidity, yeah. is what they say. I say 102 is 102. I don't care whether it's humid or not. But we have our good friend and co-host of the incredibly successful, nationally syndicated Boiler Breakdown podcast with us tonight. How are you doing tonight, Evan?
If I said I'm doing really well, I'd be lying. So I'm doing all right. I'm happy to be here, I guess.
It was a rough sports weekend.
It was.
For you. I mean, we're all kind of used to rough sports weekends at this point, but that was a specially bad one. For you,
it was one that I guess I expect some things to happen, but just the way it happened and to the level it happened was historic. It really was.
it felt like that watching it too, but we'll get into that in a few moments. I got a birdie bogey trivia question for you. It's a terrible question this week. I'm almost embarrassed to even say it out loud because I was telling you before the show, I looked for an hour before the show trying to find a trivia question and I just couldn't do it. I couldn't. My normal sources, it's like ESPN Stats and Info. They've been like MIA for months now. I don't know what happened to them. CBS NFL gave me nothing this week. Of course, college basketball is way off, so I got nothing.
Yeah.
Baseball, nothing. I've kind of tuned out. Not tuned out, but I've the national landscape, I've tuned out. So what Purdue head football coach has the best all-time winning percentage at Purdue?
Okay.
So they've had to be there at least five seasons. That was my criteria. So best win percentage as a head coach at Purdue.
Over five. A couple seasons. Names, and I feel like I'm going to pick the wrong one because I feel like there's an obvious answer, but it doesn't feel as obvious. So I guess we'll find out.
Yeah. Whoops. Hold on 1 second. Birdie Bogey is brought to you by Arlington Public House. Arlington Public House has upscale cuisine and cocktails with a casual atmosphere located 703 Main Street in Rochester, Indiana. Dine and donate night or day, I should say, September 15th, 2024, which was not today. It was yesterday. So I'm a little off on that one. They have happy hour every Thursday, Friday, and Saturday from 4 to 5 p.m., half off all appetizers, $3 off cocktails, beer, and wine. They had pasta bolognese over the weekend. I'm a big fan of pasta bolognese, so that just gives you a glimpse of their menu, in a sense. So go check out Arlington Public House in Rochester, Indiana. All right, you want to talk I shouldn't even ask you because I'm sure you don't, but let's talk college football here.
Let's do it. Might as well. Let's tackle the subject, which is something that Purdue did not do well at all.
Rip the Band-Aid off. Yeah. I watched all of the first half, and, you know, it was one of those things where, like, it was like, yay, Notre Dame lost to Northern Illinois. That's awesome. I'm sure you're sitting there like, oh, crap. They got all week to be mad and get it fixed. And they set the tone pretty early.
Yeah, going into the game, or I mean, I guess going back to last week when they lost, I was watching that game. Obviously, Northern Illinois is a special place in my heart, given our connected dynasties on EA College Football. So I actually know the roster well. It was funny because I was actually like, I'm sure – why I think I put it in our group chat, but I was actually getting nervous watching it, which felt really weird because it was a team that I had no connection to actually. It was cool to see them win. I mean, it's what makes college football and college sports awesome in general is when, you know, like I said, David beats Goliath. And I didn't know because I had a friend of mine text me. He's like, great, now we get a mad Notre Dame team coming in next week. And I was like, I don't know. I was like, and at the time, I was like, I don't know if that really matters at this point. Like in today's day and age, does it truly matter? I mean, I don't know, but I think it mattered and I didn't like it at all.
I mean, it was the first drive, 75 yard touchdown, like seven plays, 75 yards, get a stop, score again. They get a stop, score again, get a stop, score again. And then, but what was there, about a minute left or maybe a minute half left for half in Hudson Card.
So I've got it right here. So with 2 minutes and 10 seconds left, the score was 28-0 because Riley Leonard had just ran for 13 yards. So he thought, okay, Purdue's got the ball. They get the ball after half. So if you can somehow
double
get a touchdown, score after half, you know, it's still it's two scoring, but it's, you know, it's at least it's, you know, it's something. And in the final 2:10, they continued to score twice. I think it was the it actually, yeah, so it was. So after that 2:10, they pretty threw a pick six, which funny, I guess not funny enough, but it's funny now. But right before that series, I was looking at Twitter because that was more entertaining than the game on the field. And I saw some Purdue fan tweet like, this feels like a time where Purdue throws a pick six trying to force something. And quite like literally like the next play or like two plays later, which I thought that from my vantage point being at the game, I thought Card like got hit from behind, the ball just kind of popped out. And then I saw the replays like, oh no, he just like tried to shovel past it with his left hand. Just absolutely disastrous. And then they scored the very end of the half on a 70-yard run, which I'm pretty sure they were just trying to run out the clock.
Bad. The pick six was Will Levis-esque. Will Levis has now done it twice here in the past 2 weeks. But the run out the clock. So the funny thing, I mean, again, it's not funny for Purdue fans, but Notre Dame had like a 40-yard completion wiped out due to a hold right before that. It's like, oh, we're just going to run out the clock now and 70 yards later. Find yourself down 42-0 at halftime. And it's like,
it was baffling. Kind of going back to the when it started, you know, Notre Dame kind of went down and we didn't have much trouble going up 7-0, and Tanner and I sit together at the game, and he said, you know, that's exactly what they did against Northern Illinois. So maybe we, you know, maybe they got out of their system or whatever. And that wasn't the case. Purdue didn't get a first down in the whole first quarter, which is pretty bad. It was wild because as a Purdue fan, you know, coming into the year, as you guys have talked about, you know, Purdue was picked dead last in the Big Ten, and they come out against Indiana State. Granted, it's Indiana State, a team that's won one game last year. But they dominated. They did everything you wanted them to do. No big injuries. They dominated the line of scrimmage. You thought, okay, you know, this team looks better than what maybe they're projected. You get a bye week to prepare for Notre Dame, which, you know, Ryan Walters said, you know, which I kind of appreciate. So I feel like a lot of times you have a lot of coaches that say, you know, every game's the same, yada, yada. But he even said, like, you know, this game's been circled on my calendar. You know, I would venture to think that they've been prepping for that game a lot longer than the 2 weeks, you know, knowing that they would have to probably do a whole lot for Indiana State. And for them just to come out the way they did was just kind of felt shell-shocked. It was wild just to kind of watch it unfold in front of you. just because you just were just like – and my heart said I hope pretty well, but my head going to the game was like, I think, you know, Purdue's probably going to lose. You know, at worst, it's probably going to be like a – maybe like a 35-7 game or something where it's, you know, they just – they get the lead and they kind of just bleed it out, but never did I expect them to score almost double that.
Yeah, the talent disparity was pretty large. I know then, you know, year two, and he lost like guys like Nick Scorton too, which just kill you. This is Notre Dame, and I know they'd lost to Northern Illinois, all of that. There's a reason why they came into the year ranked top 10.
Right, and kind of going to the year, if you were following Purdue closely, which I know you do, obviously, one of the things you always heard about was how much better the offensive line was looking. I mean, last year it was pretty pathetic. Part of it was just they just had no depth whatsoever, injuries and whatnot, and you know, you couldn't keep Hudson Card vertical. All we kind of read about, you know, the first couple of transfers I think Walters got out of the portal were offensive linemen, so it was like he's taken, you know, he understands what they need and they got it. You're reading that, you know, they were bigger, they were stronger, they were deeper. They could easily go, you know, six, you know, seven, eight, maybe nine deep on the offensive line, which is awesome to hear. And then they just got absolutely manhandled at the line of scrimmage against Notre Dame. And then on the defensive side, just people just looked out of position. One of our better players, Kydren Jenkins, who was a rush end last year opposite of Nick Scorton, they moved him to linebacker. I think it was something that he wanted because I think he knows that if he wants to make it in the NFL, that's the position he's going to have to be because he's just not big enough for a rush end in the NFL. he looked so slow. I think it was that first TD run that he just, I think it's a bad angle, but he looked like he was running in water next to Jeremiah Love. Cause he just, yeah, it was just, that was just like, it was like, holy crap, this is, this is different.
Yeah. It seemed like the crowd was rocking for the first, you know, five minutes.
Maybe. Yeah, it was. Yeah. And
it felt pretty dead. Once Notre Dame got up about 14 early, I'm sure it kind of died down. And what was the fan reaction on like the 70-yard touchdown run right before half? People starting to laugh, because I think I would have started to laugh at that point.
Yeah, it was a lot of just like a lot of expletives. just like I think people had already like gone to the concessions at that point, like had gone, you know, the concourse, and it was just kind of like, it was like, I think people were just kind of dumbstruck and just in awe of like, are you freaking kidding me? Like like they're trying to run out the clock and you just gave up a touchdown. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it is the, his by margin, by point, by margin differential, the worst loss in Purdue football history, which I did not know that. I knew, cause I saw on Twitter, I stayed until 5 minutes left.
You're a diehard.
I'm not sure why our pal Tanner, he left at halftime. He got out of it. But I knew the record for points an opposing team scoring in Ross State was 62 done by Penn State, I think, in 2013. And I was kind of disappointed. I was like, might as well see if they get it. And they got it. And that's, I was like, all right, I think I'm out. I'm not sure I want to stick them to see them score 70.
if you're passing any records from the Hazel years, it's probably not a great sign.
And the funny thing, it's not funny, but I mean, it's at this point, it is kind of funny. But so Marcus Freeman has now been a part of the four largest opposing scoring in Ross State history. It's just now this is the first time he was on the winning side, because the other three he was helping the defense out under Hazel. So yeah, it was just, and when you make Riley Leonard look like Lamar Jackson on, yeah, like it was crazy. And the few times they actually did make him throw deep, he didn't look great. Like you kind of saw like that's exactly what you want to do, but the problem is he didn't have to do it very often because they could get, I think what Love averaged like 10 yards of carry, which granted 70 yard run will help that. But I mean, Leonard went 11 rushes for 100 yards, which is just absurd, which is something that Purdue started with last year, especially in the Syracuse game. That's the game that kind of Purdue fans had nightmares about. And it kind of was just almost like a carbon copy of that, just worse.
Yeah. Notre Dame had 285 yards rushing at halftime while, yep, averaging 11.6 yards a carry. Tackling was poor.
That was all day long, really. Yeah. And going back to arguably Purdue's best defender last year was freshman Dylan Thieneman, All American. He looked awful. There were times, I think he was credited with 4 missed tackles, and I'm not sure if those count the ones where he just got absolutely juked out of his cleats, because that happened multiple times. That was just the kind of thing that was, there's some up front. I kind of expected with some of those guys, but the fact that Dylan looked bad, that's when I knew that it was going to be a really long day. Cause there were multiple times he just kind of bounced off a defender or the ball carrier, or just got absolutely shook. I don't know if it was a, yeah, I mean, at this point, I don't know what it is. I know listening to when I got back to my, I was in my car to hear Walters kind of fresh, like right when the radio guys got him on, and you could just tell he was just shell shocked. it was just, yeah, I don't know if it was a scheme thing. I don't know if maybe again like the bye week, you know, just being rusty. But then also could be, you know, is this a result of maybe not having the most physical practices in the, you know, in the summertime because you're afraid to get guys hurt, because again, like Purdue, as a lot of other Big Ten teams are that aren't in the upper echelon, is only, you know, your ones are your best players, obviously, and you can't really afford to lose some of those guys, so they have to balance that being physical without getting guys hurt. So I don't know.
I know back I'm pretty sure Bielema practices, or they tackle during practice. Under Lovey, they didn't tackle at all, and it showed. real bad at Illinois. But I honestly thought, because I'm like, man, Riley Leonard can't really throw. And he really didn't, again, like you said, he
didn't really have to.
And he didn't look that great throwing anyway. He threw real simple completions, a little flat route to the tight end, a little crossing route, nothing crazy. But I really thought it'd be a much closer game than, obviously, you know, 59-point drubbing. I thought Notre Dame would win. I thought they'd cover, but I thought it'd be like a 10-14 point sort of win.
Yeah. Yeah. I know, kind of going into it, we thought as long as we could not let them get off to like an early double digit lead, Purdue would have a chance, because their defense is just so good. If you let that happen, then their secondary is, you know, full of future NFL guys. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like you said, Leonard didn't have to throw. I thought that was the thing. If we can make Leonard throw, we have a chance. And it was, just from the get-go. And then, like I said, the offensive was bad, which has kind of been a theme for a lot of Purdue fans. Their frustration with Graham Harrell, the offensive coordinator, just seems like nothing's really been, you know, he's, you know, has the air raid offense, and there hasn't really been, even dating back to last year, hasn't been a whole lot of like creativity, because that's kind of been just Purdue in general throughout history. Like, to win these types of games, you have to kind of get creative, because if you just try and go straight up, you're not gonna win, because you just don't have the athletes or the size a lot of these, you know, top 10 teams have. And there was just none of that. I think they threw one screen to a tight end that got like 10 yards, and we never saw it again. Granted, I mean, Hudson Card didn't really have much time, but also the receivers weren't getting open, which is another problem. But yeah, just the beat writers, when they kind of were giving out their grades for the game, every single category got an F except special teams, which, because their punter actually averaged like 47 yards a kick. So
yeah,
we got that going for us.
Yeah. That was the one thing Brohm did really well, was he'd do some like reverses and reverse passes. Like he was super creative, because he knew, really playing a team like that, you got nothing to lose. If you lose, you lose. Did Purdue defer to the second half?
Yes. Which after the first half, I was like, man, maybe we should have got the ball first, just to just to see if we can, you know, if we can get anything going. I mean, it's all hindsight at this point, but I was happy to do it, but then like after they scored, I was like, maybe we should have deferred, given them the confidence.
I was thinking today, like, man, you have like a raucous crowd, all that. You get the ball first, you go down and score a touchdown to start. Then that would start creeping in, but, you know, give up a touchdown to start, and it just kind of like, oh man, kind of took the wind out of the sails a little bit. So I won't talk about Purdue anymore. You can move on.
It's all right. It was, at this point, I kind of, it is what it is.
They have at Oregon State this week, right? On the CW.
The CW, yep.
I couldn't tell you what channel that is on any
cable. I have to check. I hope I have it on my YouTube TV. I've seen people on the message board say that people in the indie area do, so I'm hoping, but I haven't checked. Yeah. But yeah, it's a late one out west. This has kind of been a game that we've, as fans, have kind of circled as like, this is going to be a game that probably will dictate how this year goes. It's one of those swing games, I guess, because obviously a lot of people are projecting Purdue to go 4-8. So if you want to get to that potential 5-7, 6-6, this is one of those games you just have to win. And now coming off this, it's like, I mean, I hate calling a must-win game in early September, or game a must-win game in early September, but at this point it is. Because if you come out flat after getting your butt whooped, I think a lot of it's going to really suck as a fan, because a lot of the fans are probably going to tune out if you can't at least like come out and have some pride, because that was just, that was probably the thing that just hurt the most. It just looked like those guys just gave up pretty quickly out there.
And then Oregon State also came off of a drubbing at home. Yep. I think
they're an in-state rival. Yeah, I think, yeah, it was, to Oregon.
So I'm sure they'll be pretty fired up too. But I mean, it's one of those things. It was embarrassing, all of that. It's just one game, you know. You still have goal, because honestly, no one was really expecting Purdue to win that one anyway.
Right.
Well, it sucks the way it happened.
Yeah. And I also wonder too, had Notre Dame beat Northern Illinois, whether they won by 30 or won by 10, like how, and then they still did this to Purdue, like how much different would it feel? But I think, because a lot of it just feels awful, because it's like, wow, they just lost to a MAC team, and But yeah, who knows? But yeah, it was. I was trying to figure out how like a game that it felt like. Some people equated to when Baptist team lost to Fairleigh Dickinson, which I kind of agree with because it was just like, again, just that kind of that dumbstruck feeling of like, wow, this is awful. But I think that game was obviously worse given just the magnitude of the of the sport. Some people have thrown around when we lost the Music City Bowl in 2018 to Auburn.
That was bad. Yeah,
that was bad. But also, like, you look back, it's like, okay, that was a bowl game. Like, doesn't really matter. Like, not like we were playing in the playoff or anything. But I feel like even then, like, Purdue like was making plays here and there. But this one was just like nothing happened. Yeah. And like, the one time Purdue scored, I think, is because a defender like either slipped or got lost because it let we had a long throw and then eventually scored. But yeah, it was just like, I think that was the first time we crossed the 50 all game, and it was in the second half.
Elsewhere around college football, we saw Georgia escape at Kentucky, where Kentucky decided to punt with 3 minutes left on Georgia's side of the 50.
Yeah.
And they didn't get the ball back. So that's why if it was like a 4th and 15 or more, even 4th and 10 or more, 10's even pushing it. But 4th and 15 or more, it would make sense to punt. It was like a 4th and 7 at like the 46. You got to go for it. Go try to win a ball game. If you don't get it, I mean, it means nothing because you're going to have to get a stop anyway.
Right.
That was especially Kentucky got murdered by who'd they play? NC State the week before, I think.
That was Tennessee played them
this past week.
I just had it
beat them.
South Carolina.
Okay, South Carolina. Yeah.
Elsewhere
around, Arch Manning might have to play some football for Texas. Starts
in danger.
Quinn Ewers went down with an injury. They don't think it's very serious, but Arch threw for a couple touchdowns. He ran for a 60-plus yard touchdown. I saw today his Uncle Eli's longest rush at Ole Miss was 15 yards. and his grandpa's longest rush was, I think, 68 yards. Archie had some wheels. Eli did not. I don't know what Peyton.
No.
Peyton's probably wasn't very good either.
No.
Alabama went in and just destroyed Wisconsin, which I think I predicted. And now Van Dyke is out for the year for Wisconsin.
I think when this game was scheduled a couple years ago, I thought, man, it's going to be an awesome game. And then like going into this, like going to, the, I was like, poor Wisconsin. I mean, I don't really have too much sympathy for him. I was like, man, this is going to get ugly. I have a former coworker who's a Wisconsin fan, and I texted him before the game, like, how are you feeling? He goes, this is going to be awful. And sure enough, it was. And worse than probably they expected, because of Van Dyke going down almost immediately.
I think he threw it 5 times before he got hurt.
I thought
he got benched because he only had, I think, 4 completions for 16 yards or something. Like, that's a pretty bad day, but he got hurt.
Yeah. And Braden Locke is their back. I don't know anything about him.
No.
I've
seen a lot of people on Twitter kind of jump off the Fickell bandwagon. This is this year three or year two?
Two.
Two. Okay. Because
he was the
same year as Walters.
Yeah, because he was kind of the one who started the dominoes that led Brohm to take the Louisville job because he took Fickell took Wisconsin, Satterfield took Cincinnati. And that opened up Louisville.
Yeah. That's right. Because they're like, we have no identity. Back under even Paul Christ, they had a semblance of identity where, you know, they're going to, you know, pound the ball
a million times. Yeah.
Run it a million times, have a quarterback that doesn't turn it over. And now it's just like they don't have a running game.
They try and do the air raid, but they don't do it well.
And it probably takes a while to
implement
a system, especially after, you know, 25 years of the same exact stuff. Where, I mean, a lot of the recruits he inherited were all, you know, we have 6'9", 400-pound offensive linemen. Let's go run the spread, air raid.
Yeah.
good luck to you. I've seen a lot of people jumping off, and especially in football. Basketball, it takes a few years as well, but football, guys get fired after year three anymore, and that's just not fair because you just can't build a program that quickly.
Yeah. I mean, going back to pretty, as you can imagine on the message boards, people are already calling for Walters. Right. It's interesting. yeah, it's wild.
Yeah. The only other ranked matchup over the weekend was there were two of them. Number 24 Boston College almost won in Missouri. Missouri won by six, and then Arizona got whooped by Kansas State. But other than that, it's kind of a weekend worth of games, and this weekend's not that much better. We're starting to get into conference play, which will be nice. But there's a few ranked matchups. But how about we go through and give our Big Ten pick'em for the week, starting with a ranked matchup in Nebraska, Friday night, number 24, the Fighting Illini of Illinois at number, I think they're 21.
Or 20. I got 22 here on the ESPN app.
They are 22, Nebraska.
Illinois looked a lot better than I thought. I haven't watched them a ton. I know
it's better than last year.
Yeah, I know. Listen to kind of you. I know you said defense was kind of something that was a worrisome area, but they haven't given up 20 points yet this year.
They've given up eight points a game.
So that's got something rolling there. Obviously, I know the competition. I mean, obviously Kansas, but no, Kansas just lost Kansas again. Yeah. So this is definitely obviously a true test. Same for Nebraska. They haven't really played. I mean, they played Colorado, but I don't know how much you want to put into Colorado. Right. They have a couple of good athletes, but I think it's gonna be a good game. I think Nebraska pulls it out, and I see they're favored by 8.5. I think they win by around 10 to 14. I think in the end, Dylan Raiola, Patrick Mahomes Jr. looks pretty impressive.
He does.
And Nebraska's, they're starting to roll. It's long gone are the days of Scott Frost and the how much fun we had talking crap about him.
Yeah, I hate it. I hated when they hired Matt Rhule because he was such a good program builder at Temple and then Baylor, and then the Panthers was a disaster, which they're still a disaster at this point. But I Illinois ranked 24th. I don't think they're that good. It's huge to win the first win their first three. Obviously, their Big Ten schedule is they have to go to Oregon and to Penn State, to Nebraska. So those are three. But then like Michigan looks beatable. They played them at home. Then they get like Purdue, Minnesota, Northwestern, Rutgers. So they should be able to squeak out three more wins, you'd think. I'm with you. I think Nebraska wins by 10 to 13, and I have Nebraska for 4 confidence points on that one. Then we have a UCLA at LSU, true road game.
I watched a little bit of that UCLA-Indiana game of the weekend. UCLA is god-awful. I think LSU – I think they cover that 24.5.
I have LSU for 10 confidence points. UCLA is a tough job. I know it's gorgeous out there playing in the Rose Bowl. The fan attendance is terrible. Yeah, fan support is terrible.
Yeah, I mean, I saw they had to they put in like those UCLA kind of banners in the stands, but it's to rope off certain areas so they don't have to see a half full stadium. Looks like we'll see, and I don't blame these schools. Like I feel like for most of their games, the opposing team's going to have more fans because one, you've got schools like Ohio State, Penn State, Nebraska, who travel incredibly well, and then they throw in, hey, let's go to Southern California in the fall time when it's 30 degrees outside in November. It's going to be like if Ohio State goes out there this year, but if they do, I think it's going to be 80% Ohio State fans.
There were quite a few Indiana fans, and a lot of them were. There are a lot of them were tweeting like, "I told you they'd finally get back to the Rose Bowl." LSU for 10 confidence points. Marshall at Ohio State.
Marshall. Oh God, Ohio State.
That's a 40-point spread.
Yeah, if I was putting confidence points on it, they'd be my number one or the top one, I should say.
They are my number. They have 11 confidence points on them. They're favored by 40, and the over-under is only 51.5. They're expecting pretty close to a shutout there.
Yeah.
Charlotte at Indiana.
Indiana's kind of there's kind of talk of the Big Ten right now. 3-0, obviously new coach with Cignetti. I hate it, obviously. obviously, their schedule is nothing to write home about, but also, hey, you won. You win the games in front of you. It's either favored by 28. I know Charlotte is pretty bad. Who they lose? Oh, they beat Gardner Webb by 1. I don't know if Gardner Webb had a football team. Lost to Cignetti's old team, James Madison, and lost to North Carolina by 18. I think Indiana rolls. And there's a very good chance that IU starts out 6-0, just because I think after this, I saw on a tweet, there was like, they have, I think, Maryland and at Northwestern.
Very good.
And then they host, I think, Nebraska for their homecoming, which honestly could have been like a potential game day game, but that day is stacked with like,
oh, is that the 12th?
It's Alabama, Tennessee, Texas, and somebody. It's a stupid stack day.
Yeah, I think I saw it was like, hopefully no one plans a wedding on October 12th because it's like 10 ranked matchups or something.
Yeah.
I have IU pretty handily for 9 confidence points, and I think they take Illinois' spot in the top 25, which would be terrible, miserable. Yep. In year one of Coach Sagetti. Yeah. I know Indiana fans are pretty excited, as they should be. I mean, there's always an excitement around a new coach coming in, but especially when you start out 3-0 and have a chance to go, as you said, 6-0 to start. Villanova at Maryland. It'd be a fun basketball matchup a couple years ago.
Yeah. I forgot some of these Big East teams have basketball or football. Yeah. I don't even see a line on this.
It probably isn't.
Yeah. I'm going to take Maryland just because they're at home.
I have Maryland for 7. This is my number 12 game. It's Kent State at Penn State. Penn State is 49-point favorites.
Over-under is 55.5. So, again, kind of similar to the Ohio State game. Penn State rolls in that. I'm gonna say they don't cover, though.
That's a tough spread to cover. But Kent State found themselves down, 50-something, nothing at halftime at Tennessee. Tennessee's better than Penn State, but still, that's pretty bad. USC travels to Michigan.
I can't believe Michigan's still ranked. I guess they're 2-1, 18th. But yeah. I don't know much about this USC. I haven't paid too much attention. Blanked Utah State. I guess they did win at LSU the first week. That's right. I'll take USC. I think they cover. I think Michigan is above average this year. They just don't have which understandably you lose as much as you did after a national championship run. I think USC takes care of business.
Yeah. I think in our preseason predictions, I had them 8-4, which is, it's above average. But USC 5.5-point favorites. Michigan looked bad against Arkansas State. They made a quarterback change again where Alex Orji starting this week. They've lucked out facing Texas and USC at home.
Yeah.
And I think they get it done. And I only have 2 confidence points on this one. So I'm taking Michigan mainly because I don't know if USC's year from last year is kind of still has a bad taste in my mouth because I just think they're trash defensively.
Yeah.
They have looked good so far, but give me Michigan for 2. Now we have Rutgers at Virginia Tech.
Virginia Tech favored by 3. I'm gonna take Virginia Tech. I'd probably put a confidence point of like 2 on this one though, because Rutgers has looked pretty. They've only played 2 games, but they've looked good doing it. So
Rutgers has looked much improved. And right when they hired Schiano, I know he'd have him at least respectable.
Yeah.
Virginia Tech at home. Virginia Tech had, their opening week they lost to Vanderbilt, who Vanderbilt just got drubbed by Georgia State over the weekend. So that was pretty bad. But Virginia Tech at home for 5 confidence points. Northwestern travels to Washington. Washington coming off a bad home loss in the Apple Cup. I think it's the Apple Cup. Against Washington State.
Both teams are pretty bad. I think you could probably argue as of right now, you probably put these 2 teams, UCLA and Purdue, at the bottom in really any order that you want, in my opinion, as of right now after this last weekend's performance. But I'm going to take Washington because I think Northwestern is pretty pitiful.
Yeah, I think Northwestern is the worst team in the conference.
I think at the end, them and UCLA will be battling it out.
I completely agree. Because, I mean, Northwestern, even against Eastern Illinois, didn't – I mean, I think they were up 14-7 at half. They ended up winning 31-7, but they lost to Duke at home. They're playing in the weird, you know, 8,000-seat county fair stadium, yeah. What I like to call it.
It's like tractor pull stadium.
Yeah. Give me Washington for 8. Iowa at Minnesota, first 1-6 wins this one.
Iowa 2.5-point favorites. I've only watched one Minnesota game, and that was the North Carolina game. They haven't given up a point since. Granted, they played Rhode Island and Nevada. This is a tough one. I know Iowa, were they losing to Troy at half?
They were, I think it was 14-10. Troy got the ball back in the third quarter down 3, and in typical Iowa fashion, they got a pick 6.
Yeah.
It was kind of over at that point.
I'm going to take the Hawkeyes just because I think Minnesota is going to be pretty, as a lot of Big Ten teams are, and the new Big Ten, I think, pretty average. But I think Iowa just has just a little bit more talent.
Yeah, Iowa's offense is so bad. Give me Minnesota for one. I give the point to the home team, essentially, because I think it's probably the biggest coin flip game of the weekend is that one. So Minnesota for one. Michigan State at Boston College.
Bill O'Brien doing some good things. I'm going to take Boston College for this one.
Yeah, I agree with you. Boston College for 3 confidence points. Michigan State's looked a lot better than they did last year, but going on the road, BC's looked fantastic as well. I know Florida State stinks, but still winning at Florida State's pretty impressive, although Memphis just did it, so I don't know how impressive it is, really. But Boston College for 3. And then the nightcap out there in Corvallis, Purdue at Oregon State.
8:30 kickoff. I thought it was 7:30.
7:30 Central Time. The best time.
Best time, yes. I was talking with our good pal, Aaron Lynch, who he'll be joining me on the Boiler Breakdown tomorrow when we record. And he said the same time as the White Sox game against, I think, the Padres. And
I wonder what he's going to watch.
Yeah. Not sure which one might be worse. both teams coming off getting just absolutely pummeled by one of their in-state rivals. Obviously this game, the Notre Dame one, is my least favorite. For football, least favorite team. So that one, this one just leaves a really bad taste in your mouth. I'm anxious to see how Purdue responds. And because of that, and just because I can't pick against them, I think Purdue gets it done, but confidence point of 1 on it.
Purdue can't play any worse.
that's true.
We say it after a team gets beat pretty badly, but it's a legitimate thing this week. Yeah. They literally cannot play worse.
I think at halftime, like I said, like Notre Dame had like 200 plus rushing yards. I think Purdue had Purdue had like negative 30 or something stupid. It was, which I think counts sacks, but still, they had no ground game whatsoever. But yeah, it's both teams coming off getting their butts kicked, and good news for somebody is someone has to win. So,
giving it to the home team. Give me Oregon State for 6.
This is the return game. Oregon State came to Ross-Ade in 2021. It was the first, my first game back after COVID, which was a pretty cool. That was a night game. So the return trip is here.
Top 25 games this weekend, we have somehow Clemson still ranked 21st. We have NC State at Clemson.
Give me Clemson.
Yeah, I agree. Give me Clemson. Miami, Ohio at Notre Dame. Notre Dame's 27.5-point favorites.
No, my luck, they'll win by 6 in this game. I think Notre Dame's definitely obviously closer to the team that we saw go into Texas A&M and pull that one out versus what we saw against Northern Illinois. I think Notre Dame is pretty good. Obviously, very easy for me to say that now, but I think they take care of business pretty easily, and they don't get tripped up again.
I agree.
Is Miami, Ohio, were they the preseason MAC favorites?
I think so, and they're 0-2.
Yeah.
Blaine Gabbert's brother, Brett, was supposed to have a great year, and he is so far not.
They lost to Northwestern, so they can't be that good.
Yeah, that's a good point. Number 12, Utah at Oklahoma State. Number 14.
The Utes or Mike Gundy and the boys? Give me the Utes in this one.
Yeah, give me Utah as well. I think they're pretty good, although their quarterback, Cameron Rising, Grice, I think his name's Rising, did miss last week's game, but I think he should be back. Number 6, Tennessee at number 15, Oklahoma. Your second favorite team.
Second favorite team. This is what's their Heupel's alma mater? Going back to Oklahoma, which I still, looking at him now, I cannot believe that that man beat out Drew Brees in the Heisman race. He didn't win, but he finished above Drew Brees. Tennessee looks really good. Nico, their quarterback, is incredible. They have their defense is a lot better, I think, than they anticipated. I think Tennessee goes in there and covers that 7 points pretty easily.
To put salt on the wounds, Deion Burks already has 22 catches for Oklahoma this year.
Sweet.
I'm taking Tennessee because I think this Nico Iamaleva is going to be an absolute superstar once he's done.
Yeah.
And he's only a freshman. Yeah. And I saw today.
Dolphins quarterback?
Maybe. Somebody's got to be at this point. I saw today Oklahoma has the third highest percentage of offensive drives end in three and out so far this year at 50. I think it's like 51%. So, that is it for college pick'em. I do have my pick six here, which is college related. I have three Purdue football players, three Purdue basketball players, all current.
Okay.
And I want to hear your thoughts on these guys, starting with Hudson Card.
Huddy, a guy that came into Purdue obviously with a lot of expectation, obviously, you know, being, I think he was a four-star recruit going to Texas, then they got Ewers and they got Arch Manning. So it was kind of like writing was on the wall for him to leave. Came to Purdue, really excited. Still haven't seen what I think he can really do. We're kind of just waiting. That's kind of hoping for this Notre Dame game could have been kind of his coming out party. He had some decent games last year, Minnesota, Indiana game. He kind of put the team on his back, but we still haven't kind of seen that against a kind of top tier opponent. Because I think he has potential NFL capabilities, but he just has not shown it yet. Part of it, he was injured a lot last year. And then this year he, you know, did really well against Indiana State. Went 24-25 and the one pass that was incomplete. I think the receiver just lost it in the sun. And then Notre Dame was just not good. Part of it, again, he didn't have much time, but a guy I hope can, because this is his last year at Purdue, I hope he can be the quarterback that I hope he can be.
Devin Maccabee, although as College Football 25, I don't know if they changed his Devin McCobie. Is it still McCobie?
I think so, yeah. Awesome story, you know, walk on. They call him Crazy Legs because he runs really weird, very shifty. Just a guy who was a walk on. And then when there was kind of the viral video that went around that when Walters took the job, his first thing he did was he gave Maccabee a scholarship, and he's definitely earned it. He was close to 1,000 yards, I think, 2 years ago, the Big Ten championship appearance year. Nice 1-2 punch now with Reggie Love, hopefully. Just a really good dude. It sounds like kind of one of those like cool stories of you hear, you know, like kind of when you think about like NIL and all that kind of stuff, kind of the stories that make NIL kind of worth it. Like a kid who, you know, was nothing. And then now he's, you know, making a lot of money because of the work he's put on the field versus just someone writing him a check.
Right. Dylan Thienemann.
Stud, except for Saturday. one of three brothers who have played at Purdue. He's the only one who earned a scholarship out of high school out of Westfield, Indiana, which is not terribly far from where I live now. It was kind of a revelation last year when he came into Purdue. When Walters came in, I was a little worried because he was bringing in a lot of defensive backs, and I was kind of worried that Thienemann might get kind of lost in the shuffle because I didn't know much about his ability. I was worried, like, man, this, you know, the, you know, kind of kid from a Purdue family. I hope he doesn't just, you know, jump ship because of he's getting, you know, played over. And boy, was I wrong, because he started from day one and became an All-American. So it's pretty crazy. But definitely a kid. Walters calls him one of the fastest guys on the team. It was fastest last year. He has incredible closing speed. I think he can definitely play on Sunday someday. But he did not show it on Saturday. That's for sure.
Switching to the basketball side of things, Braden Smith.
my point guard. again, just like a crazy, like a cool story, you know, a kid who kind of classic with Painter is a kid who I think his best offer was like, I don't want to say Liberty, but something kind of like that coming out of high school, you know, 6 foot, maybe 6 foot, you know, coming out of high school and starts right away, wins the Big Ten, or is on team that wins the Big Ten. Obviously having Zach Edey helps, but I think also he unlocked a lot for Zach that people don't give him credit for. And just kind of became a nice kind of a cold-blooded killer this last year. And now it's his team. So I'm really excited to see what he can do in the post Edey era. Hit some big shots for Purdue. One against Illinois, which I had fun watching with some Illinois coworkers.
Best night of my life.
Yeah. But yeah, just a kid who, again, like just he's a dog, and then Purdue fans love him.
That's really a testament to Matt Painter's ability to develop players too, because again, like Zach Edey under recruited, Braden Smith under recruited. And I remember practices before his freshman year, you guys were always talking about, man, I keep hearing Braden Smith's like a stud. And I'm just like, shut up.
Yeah. He's
a three-star unranked guy. How good can he be? And here he is.
Yeah, supposedly there were reports that like Painter, like they knew he obviously they believed him, but then like when he was actually practicing, they're like, dang, we actually like he did really good with this one. Like I think he kind of surprised even the coaches. Cause I mean, I think Gonzaga was starting to sniff around him a little bit when he committed to Purdue. So obviously that, I mean, and I know supposedly Fuse come after him these last two off seasons with a nice check to come to Gonzaga. And thankfully Braden's turned it down. But because he's it's his team now. So I'm excited to see what he can do.
Will Berg.
Big Willie Iceberg. Great highlight tapes. And in the few times he got into a game, he showed some cool, like some stuff. Obviously that's going to be very different this year when he's forced to actually play, you know, meaningful minutes against legit all Big Ten caliber players. And not the backups. Just a big Swedish redhead who supposedly has some range. We'll see. It can't hurt that the last 2 years he's practiced against the best player in college basketball. I don't know if he'll start. Depending on who you ask, some people have him starting, some people have him coming off the bench, and Purdue kind of playing a more of a small ball five with Trey Kaufman Wren. But it's his time to shine because we're going to need him, because our backup five is Daniel Jacobson, a freshman. Who's about as skinny as a toothpick. So Berg will have to play meaningful minutes. Just kind of I'm intrigued by him for sure.
Last one here, Miles Colvin.
Hopefully a guy who can take Jaden Ivey like jump. I'm not saying he's going to be a top six pick, but he's got the tools for it. I think he's incredibly athletic, has a great shot. Seemed to really pick up on the defensive end as the year went on, a kid who didn't play a whole lot throughout the year. In high school, he played for a really crappy small school. His AAU team was nothing to write. Like they didn't play on a major circuit. So he never really played great competition until he got to Purdue. So I think that definitely and being the only freshman on the team, it was definitely it was hard to go through, kind of similar to what Carson Edwards had to go through right when he was a freshman, but hopefully he played a lot down the stretch in the tournament. I think because they needed the athleticism because he's an incredible athlete. So hopefully between him and Cam Heidi, Purdue should kind of get up and down the floor a lot more than they were accustomed to with Zach Edey and being able to run and gun.
Yeah. The Pick Six segment is brought to you by Proforma Print 2 Promo Group. Over 50 years experience. Contact Proforma Print 2 Promo Group for all your printing needs. On this day, real quick, I'll get you here educated. On this day in 1937, the then Washington Redskins NFL franchise play their first game in Washington at Griffith Stadium, and they defeat the New York Giants. So they defeated the Giants yesterday, 77 years later. On this day in 1939, the New York Yankees clinched their 11th and fourth consecutive pennant. So 11th overall, fourth consecutive. They were pretty good back in the 30s. On this day in 1955, I don't know how this is noteworthy, but a Yankee Mickey Mantle pulled a hamstring muscle trying to run out a bunt. Like I pull a hamstring every time I walk up the stairs these days.
Well, you should get out of bed.
On this day in 1973, old Orenthal James Simpson ran for a then NFL record 250 yards for the Bills. You think he did it? I'm just kidding. on this day in, let's see, it's not great ones in September. 1995, the professor Greg Maddux of the Atlanta Braves sets a record 17 consecutive road victories.
Is there a documentary about him coming out or
out? It came out, and I guess it's incredible. It was on MLB Network. I haven't watched it, but he literally, they told, I think it was Smoltz told the story how Maddux would call his own game.
Yeah, I saw that.
He'd catch the pitch back.
Ball, yeah.
Or catch the ball back. Which is crazy, yeah.
Yeah.
That was pretty absurd. I need to go watch that one. On this day in 1997, Mark McGwire signed with the St. Louis Cardinals for $26 million.
He had a pretty decent career.
On this day in 2000, Sammy Sosa became the second player to hit 50 or more home runs in three consecutive years, joining Mark McGwire.
Slamming Sammy.
Steroids did a number. on this day in 2018, the Patrick Mahomes' reign of terror on the NFL was starting. It was the second game or second week of the season, and not technically rookie year since he did sit behind Alex Smith, but he threw 10 touchdowns first 2 weeks of the season, threw six against Pittsburgh, and that was the end of me liking the NFL. that is going to do it for On This Day. On This Day is brought to you by Mooney Woodcrafts for all your – he's an incredible woodworker. I know Tanner's got some boiler breakdown stuff. He has some Tanner J-Man show stuff. He has some, like, wedding stuff he got from him. It's almost Christmas time. Contact Thad Mooney at Mooney Woodcrafts for all your woodworking needs. I think I'm going to skip three winners, three losers this week since we're running out of time. I'll give you my big loser for the NFL season. That's Miami Dolphins. Got absolutely drubbed again by the Buffalo Bills in prime time. And they were going to lose before all the stuff went down anyway. And they played poorly. Tua Tagovailoa threw three interceptions, including a horrendous pick six. And then he tried to, you know, on a fourth and – I think there was a fourth and four at the Bills 12. Tries to pick up the first down and then didn't slide. Stupidly went head first into the guy. Knew instantly it was another concussion.
Yeah.
He did the posturing thing. So
really scary.
It was a scary moment. You know, they've played two Thursday night games the past 3 years, and both of those games is when he got injured. Really
That's bad. Right, yeah.
Because last year they didn't have a Thursday. They had a Friday. It was after Thanksgiving. He is the only quarterback since the concussion protocol has gone into place to be placed in it three times in a two-year span. And he says he's not going to retire. It's not up to us to say he should retire. You know, it should be up to him. And, you know, a lot of doctors say we don't know the long-lasting effects of concussions. I mean, they say CTE and all that, and there is – I mean, your brain does – not do great things when you have a concussion. Really they don't know, because some brains are different. Brains are just different. Yeah. So he says he wants to come back and play. I don't know. And I think he will be back to play this year. I think it'd be smart to put him on the IR, see how he feels after bye week in week six. As of right now, after coming into the year with a ton of promise and I felt pretty good about him, I now feel like, man, if they have to start Skylar Thompson the rest of the year, there's a legitimate chance they finish 1-17.
Yeah, it was a scary moment. It just sucks when injuries always suck, but especially like when you have so much promise and it happens this early in the year. It's just kind of like it just takes the wind out of your sails.
If it's going to happen, I guess I'm okay with it happening week two instead of week 16. I haven't emotionally checked out, but then my expectations gone way down, and it's kind of been more fun to watch the NFL when I'm not like freaking out every Sunday. Picks here. We have a Thursday nighter, New England Patriots at the New York Jets.
Are we on the right week here? I guess give me Aaron Rodgers at home, I guess.
I hate it.
Yeah.
Jets got lucky yesterday. Titans were down inside the 10-yard line, and Will Levis could not complete a ball when they were down 7. But Jets for 14. Rodgers, they asked him. I can't stand the dude. Like it, it almost makes me angry watching him. But they asked him, how does it feel to win your first game as a New York Jet? And he said, well, technically that was my second win. They won the game. He blew out his Achilles after he played 4 games. That just it just made me so mad when he said that, because he was I couldn't tell if he was joking. That's the problem.
Yeah, that is, yeah, because he
give me Jets for 14. We have the New York Giants, who are an absolute disaster, playing the Cleveland Browns in Cleveland.
Like, yeah, give me the Browns.
Yeah, Browns for 13 confidence points for this one. Green Bay Packers at the Tennessee Titans.
Packers have kind of not looked great, but I think Tennessee's looked worse. So, screw it. Give me the Titans. I hate the Packers.
Yeah, I hate the Packers as well. I assume Jordan Love's going to be out this week too, and if he is, I think Titans should get it done. They've had two kind of choke jobs here the first 2 weeks. Give me Titans for 2. I think they get off the schneid. The Chicago Bears travel to the Indianapolis Colts.
Bears defense looks awesome. Offensive line looks atrocious. Reverse psychology here. I'm gonna say the Colts, and hopefully the Bears pull it out.
Caleb Williams, did you see the stat? Was pressured on 36 of his 42 dropbacks last night for 80 something percent.
Whenever it was like third and more than 5, I was like, "It's here's a blitz, and he's gonna have no time." It's bad. I felt bad for him because like the defense, you know, did everything they could to keep them in the game, and he obviously he's a rookie, and he had quite a few balls that just looked bad. It's just a timing thing, but when you're running for your life, it's one thing. But I think give me the Colts.
Barely anyone runs a pro style in college football anymore, and I think that's why we're seeing quarterbacks having such a hard time, because it's just a one read, or it's a real simple offense in college anymore. But give me Colts for 5. Houston at Minnesota.
Houston's favorite 3. Yeah, give me Houston. I think Houston. I mean, I'm trying to make myself feel better after last time. I think Houston's pretty legit. That offense is really fun to watch. Give me Houston.
Yeah, give me Houston for 6. Philadelphia at New Orleans.
Man, New Orleans is. I haven't paid attention to a whole lot of the NFL in the offseason outside of the Bears, but like, yeah, watching the Saints put up these numbers. Yeah, give me the Saints at home. Why not?
Saints for 3. Chargers at Pittsburgh.
Where is that? Am I trying to look at? Justin Fields 2-0.
I think they've scored 1 offensive touchdown.
Give me the Steelers because they're at home.
I'm taking the Chargers for 7, although this is a classic Chargers loss. But with Harbaugh there, maybe not. The Denver Broncos at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Sorry, Tan. I think the Buccaneers get that done.
Yeah, Bo Nix has not looked great through 2 starts, and we probably should have seen this coming after his 10 years in college. sorry, T-Dog. Give me Tampa Bay for 15. The disaster that is the Carolina Panthers travel to Vegas, coming off a huge win at the Baltimore Ravens.
Many thanks to the Panthers for the trade that landed the Bears DJ Moore and now Caleb Williams. Give me the Raiders.
Raiders for 16. Miami Dolphins at the Seattle Seahawks.
Give me Seattle after everything that transpired.
This will be the J-Man's bookie prediction of the week. I'm bought in on Skylar Thompson. Give me the Dolphins for 1.
Let's go. There we go.
I literally had the Seahawks winning this one for 8, and I changed it right now because honestly, it's because I needed a bookie prediction and I couldn't think of one. So, Baltimore Ravens at the Dallas Cowboys.
What's the spread on that one? Where is it? Wait. Give me Baltimore.
Baltimore coming off a bad loss. Again, they like to blow 10-point leads. But Dallas coming off a bad one, too. Give me Dallas for 4. Niners at the L.A. Rams.
What, McCaffrey's out for how long, did they say?
He's on the IR, so at least 4 games. It sounds like Debo might not play this week as well. Rams just got murdered by the Arizona Cardinals.
Yeah. Give me the Niners, even though they're hobbled.
I'm taking the Rams for 8. Okay. I don't know why. Detroit Lions at the Arizona Cardinals.
Give me Detroit. I'll do an NFC North Alliance, even though I hate them.
Lions are pretty good. Give me the – almost said Tigers. Give me the Lions for 10. Kansas City Chiefs at the Atlanta Falcons.
Give me the Chiefs.
Yeah, Chiefs for 9. And how many times will they show Taylor in that one? Jacksonville Jaguars at the Buffalo Bills.
Give me Buffalo.
Buffalo for 12. Washington Commanders at the Cincinnati Bengals. 2-0 once again. Or 0-2 once again.
Yeah, tough, tough loss yesterday. I think they bounce back in a big way.
I do too. Give me the Bengals. I just exited out of it without remembering my confidence points. Give me the Bengals for 11 for that one. J-Man's Book of Bricks Week brought to you by Indiana Farm Bureau Insurance Agent Travis Watching for Life Home Auto. Business, renters, workers, comp, and farm insurance. Contact Travis 219-869-4561. Burry Bogey, what head coach has the highest winning percentage in a career at Purdue? Minimum of 5 seasons coached.
5 seasons. So I've got 3 names in my head. This is the only question I'm going to ask. I'm not going to ask. Screw that. Give me Jack Mollenkopf.
You got it. You nailed it.
I was like, he's got a building named after him. The practice facility. I was like, cause obviously it was Tiller. I was like, well, Tiller, but I know he had some bad years towards the end. Yeah, it was like him and Mollenkopf were my top two.
There's another guy that was pretty close to Mollenkopf, but I figured you'd get him because I'd actually heard of that guy too. But there were a couple people on there like I've never heard of that man in my entire life. Thanks for watching the Tan and J-Man show. Thanks, Webby, for joining me on this Monday night. Tanner will be back next Monday with another episode. Have a fantastic week, everybody.